A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one, and it's personal in a way that I think a lot of people are going to recognize. He's been dealing with a cascade of stressors. A one-year-old, two wars here in Israel, a forced move after a landlord refused to fix a leak, and the financial strain that comes with all of that. He has ADHD. He's on a stable dose of medication, but the coping mechanisms that used to work have just been flattened by the sheer volume of what life has thrown at him. And he realized the kind of help he actually needs isn't talk therapy, it's occupational therapy. The problem is finding a practitioner who understands adult ADHD and sensory processing, and affording that person out of pocket when bills are already sky high. So his question is, does remote occupational therapy actually work? And can it bridge that gap between needing specialized help and being able to access it?
I spent decades in medicine. And I can tell you the term occupational therapy is a century old, and it's terrible marketing for what the profession actually does. People hear occupation and think job, or they think it's handwriting practice for kids or stroke rehab for seniors. And it is those things, but it's also the profession that bridges sensory processing, executive function, and the physical environment to make daily life actually manageable. I've heard it described as the therapy of doing, and that's the best shorthand I've got.
The therapy of doing. So when Daniel says he's drowning in context, shifting in sensory overwhelm, and talk therapy feels like the wrong tool, he's not wrong about his own needs. He's naming something real.
He's absolutely naming something real. Talk therapy, and I say this with respect for the field, is fundamentally about insight, cognition, emotional processing. Occupational therapy is about function. It asks, what do you need to do today, and what's in the way? And the what's in the way can be sensory, it can be executive, it can be environmental. For someone with ADHD who's already medicated and still struggling, the bottleneck often isn't insight. The bottleneck is the 47 micro-decisions between waking up and getting out the door, or the construction noise that makes it impossible to hold a thought. That's OT territory.
The access problem Daniel's facing is actually two problems stacked on top of each other. The first is finding an OT who specializes in adult ADHD and sensory processing, which is a narrow niche. The second is affording that person during a financial crunch, and his question is whether remote delivery solves both without sacrificing the thing that makes OT effective in the first place, which is understanding someone's actual environment.
And I want to take that question seriously because the skepticism is reasonable. If you've ever had an OT session, you know a lot of it is tactile, it's observational, it's about being in the room. So the question is, what translates through a screen, and what doesn't?
Let's start with what the research actually says, because I know you dug into this.
There's a 2024 systematic review published in the American Journal of Occupational Therapy. 12 studies, 487 participants total, that looked at telehealth OT for adults with neurological conditions. The headline finding was that telehealth OT showed non-inferior outcomes to in-person care for functional task performance. That's the technical term, non-inferior, meaning it wasn't worse, and patient satisfaction was high across the board.
Non-inferior is one of those phrases that sounds like damning with faint praise. But in medical research, it's actually a strong claim. It means we ran the numbers and couldn't find a meaningful difference.
And for someone in Daniel's position, non-inferior is a win, because the alternative isn't in-person OT. The alternative is no OT at all. The access barrier is the whole ballgame here.
I want to push on the ADHD piece specifically, because that review was neurological conditions broadly. What does the evidence look like for ADHD and sensory processing delivered remotely?
I'm not going to pretend otherwise. The evidence base for telehealth OT with adult ADHD specifically is still emerging. Most of what we have is pediatric, studies showing moderate effect sizes for parent-mediated interventions delivered remotely. So, you've got parents being coached by an OT via video and then implementing strategies with their kids. Those studies show real promise, but for adults with ADHD, we're extrapolating. The mechanism should transfer. Coaching someone through environmental modifications and compensatory strategies doesn't depend on age, but the direct evidence is sparse.
The honest answer is, probably works, but the research hasn't fully caught up to the practice.
And that's true of a lot of telehealth, honestly. The pandemic forced adoption faster than the research cycle could keep pace. We're now getting the studies that confirm what clinicians were seeing on the ground.
Let's talk about the mechanism, because this is where I think Daniel's intuition might be leading him slightly astray. He said he's hesitant because so much of understanding someone's challenges requires physically seeing their environment and hearing the noise. But I'd argue a remote session might actually give the OT a more honest view of his environment than an in-person visit ever could.
Oh, this is a great point. When you go to an OT clinic, you're in a controlled space. The lighting is whatever the clinic uses, the sounds are clinical sounds, the chair is whatever chair they have. The OT sees you in their world. With a remote session, the OT sees you in your world. The actual desk you work at, the actual window, the construction noise comes through, the actual clutter patterns that build up in the corners of the room. They can ask you to walk your laptop around and show them things. They can hear the noise through your microphone.
Daniel mentioned the construction noise driving him crazy. An in-person OT would never hear that. A remote OT hears it in real time and can say, okay, that's what we're dealing with. Let's talk about what's between you and that sound.
They can do it at different times of day. An in-person session is a one-hour snapshot. A remote OT can ask you to record a quick video tour of your workspace in the morning, then another one in the afternoon when the light changes or when the noise peaks. They get a temporal dimension that a clinic visit completely misses.
There's a name for this in the literature, right? Synchronous versus asynchronous.
Synchronous is live video. You and the OT are on a call together, same as a Zoom meeting. Asynchronous is store and forward. You record something, send it, the OT reviews it, and sends back recommendations. The research suggests synchronous is better for initial assessment, because the OT needs to ask follow-up questions in real time and see how you respond to prompts. But asynchronous can be highly effective for ongoing coaching and environmental audits. You might do your first session live, then switch to a model where you send weekly video updates and get written feedback.
We've established that remote OT can work, and that the mechanism of environmental observation might actually be better remotely in some ways. But for Daniel specifically, the question isn't just, does it work? It's, can I actually make this happen from Israel with a toddler on a tight budget?
Let's break that down piece by piece. First, the practitioner search. Daniel doesn't need a generalist OT. He needs someone who specializes in adult ADHD and sensory processing. The gold standard certification for sensory integration is called SIPT, Sensory Integration and Praxis Tests. Fewer than 5% of OTs hold that certification. So right away, we're talking about a small pool.
Then you add the telehealth filter, and the adult ADHD filter, and the willing to accept international clients filter, and that pool gets very small very fast.
I looked at one of the major directories, the OT Toolbox's telehealth listing. As of this month, they list 47 OTs who specialize in adult ADHD. Three of them accept international clients.
Three humans on a directory. That's a sobering number. But three is not zero.
Three is not zero, and that's just one directory. There are others. The American Occupational Therapy Association has a Find an OT tool that you can filter by telehealth and specialty. Some university-affiliated telehealth programs have broader reach. But the point stands, the search is going to take effort, and effort is exactly what someone in Daniel's position has the least of.
This is the paradox that drives me crazy about the whole mental health and therapy landscape. The people who most need these services are often the ones least equipped to navigate the system that gatekeeps them. If you're already overwhelmed, adding research and vet multiple specialized practitioners across time zones to your to-do list is genuinely counterproductive.
It's a real design failure. Some of the telehealth platforms are trying to address this. They handle scheduling, billing, matching. But the ones that specialize in OT for adults with ADHD are still niche players. We're not talking about BetterHelp levels of friction reduction here.
Let's talk cost, because that's the other half of Daniel's equation. What does this actually look like financially?
In the US, in-person OT averages $150 to $250 per session without insurance. Remote OT platforms typically charge $100 to $180 per session. Some offer sliding scales, so you're saving somewhere between $20 and $70 per session on the sticker price.
The real savings are in the hidden costs. No commute, no parking, no babysitter for the one-year-old during the travel time. For Daniel, a 45-minute drive each way plus a 50-minute session is basically 3 hours. Remote OT is 50 minutes, and he's back in his life.
For a parent with ADHD, that time savings is a therapeutic intervention in itself. Every transition, getting in the car, finding parking, sitting in a waiting room, driving back, is a cognitive cost. Remote delivery eliminates all of that. You close the laptop, and you're done.
There's also the Israeli context, which adds some wrinkles. Health funds here, Clalit, Maccabi, and the others, do cover occupational therapy for certain conditions. But adult ADHD and sensory processing disorder are often excluded. So Daniel's probably paying out of pocket either way.
The specialist pool in Israel is smaller. There are excellent OTs here, but finding one who focuses on adult ADHD and sensory processing, speaks English comfortably if that's a preference, and has availability. That's a tough combination. Remote delivery opens access to practitioners in the US, the UK, Australia. But then you've got licensing questions, time zone coordination, and whether the OT understands the specific stressors of living in a conflict zone.
That last point is not trivial. If Daniel's OT is in California and he's describing what it's like to work through rocket sirens, there's a cultural translation layer that matters.
It matters a lot, and it's something to screen for when you're vetting practitioners. You want someone who can hold that context without needing it explained from scratch every session. Some OTs who work with international clients develop that skill. Others don't.
I want to pull on a thread you mentioned earlier. The idea that remote OT shifts the focus from fixing the person to fixing the environment. That seems like a knock-on effect worth exploring.
It's one of the most interesting things about telehealth OT, and it's not obvious until you think about it. In a clinic, the OT can do hands-on sensory integration work. Brushing protocols, weighted vests, swing therapy, all the tactile interventions. Remotely, they can't do any of that. So they're forced to become experts in environmental modification, compensatory strategies, and sensory diet planning. And for adults with ADHD, that's often the more sustainable intervention anyway.
Because you can't change your brain's sensory gating, but you can change your noise-canceling setup.
You can change your lighting, your task sequencing, your notification settings, the physical layout of your desk, the acoustic treatment of your workspace. These are all things an OT can assess and modify remotely. And the modifications stick because they're built into the environment, not dependent on you remembering to do a protocol every day.
Let's get concrete about Daniel's specific sensory issue, the construction noise. What would a remote OT actually do with that?
A good OT would start with a sensory audit of the workspace. They'd have Daniel move his webcam around, describe what he's hearing and when it's worst, and map the noise patterns against his daily schedule. Then they'd likely recommend a layered approach. First, strategic use of noise-canceling headphones, but not just any headphones. Different construction frequencies require different noise-canceling profiles, and an OT who knows sensory processing can recommend specific models or settings. Second, scheduling high-focus work during the quietest parts of the day, if there's any predictability to the construction schedule. Third, creating what's called a sensory refuge, a specific spot in the home with additional acoustic dampening, maybe heavy curtains or a rug or foam panels, where the noise is minimized.
All of that can be planned and evaluated remotely. None of it requires the OT to physically be in the room.
None of it. And here's the thing. An in-person OT could recommend the same strategies, but they'd be working from Daniel's description of the noise, not from actually hearing it through the microphone during a session. The remote assessment is more direct.
The thing Daniel was worried about, that remote delivery misses the sensory context, might actually be the thing remote delivery does best.
For environmental sensory issues, absolutely. Where remote delivery falls short is the hands-on sensory integration work I mentioned. If Daniel needed a specific tactile protocol or vestibular input that required equipment and trained touch, that's not happening through a webcam. But for an adult with ADHD whose primary sensory challenges are environmental, noise, visual clutter, lighting, the remote format is well suited.
Let's talk about the commitment question. because I think there's a misconception that OT requires a long-term program to be effective. Daniel's already overwhelmed. The idea of signing up for 12 weeks of anything is daunting.
The research actually challenges that assumption. Even a single telehealth OT consultation can yield significant improvements in environmental modifications and compensatory strategies. You don't need a 12-week program to get value. You can do one session, implement what you learn, and then decide if you need more.
That lowers the stakes considerably. One session is $120 and 50 minutes of your time. If it helps, great. If it doesn't, you're not locked into anything.
For someone with ADHD, lowering the commitment threshold is itself a therapeutic strategy. The barrier to starting is often the biggest barrier. If you tell yourself, I just need to try one session and see, that's a much smaller cognitive load than I need to find and commit to an ongoing therapy relationship.
I want to talk about the screening process, because Daniel's going to need the vet practitioners, and most people don't know what questions to ask an OT.
The first filter is just the direct research, telehealth occupational therapist adult ADHD sensory processing. But once you've got a short list, you need to ask specific questions. Number one, how do you assess sensory processing remotely? A good OT will have a clear protocol. They'll describe the video tour, the sensory audit questionnaire, the environmental observation process. If they seem vague or say, we'll figure it out, that's a red flag. What's your experience with adult ADHD specifically? Not pediatric ADHD, not general developmental disorders, adult ADHD. The presentation is different. The life context is different, and the strategies that work for a 7-year-old in a classroom don't necessarily translate to a 30-something parent working from home. You also want to ask, do you accept international clients, and how do you handle time zone differences? And if you're Daniel, what's your familiarity with the stressors of living in a conflict zone?
That last one is going to narrow the field even further, but I think it's worth asking. You don't want to spend half of every session explaining the context of your life.
You really don't. Therapy is expensive enough without paying to provide cultural orientation to your therapist.
Let's pull this together into something actionable. If Daniel, or anyone in a similar situation, wants to pursue remote OT, what's the actual sequence of steps?
Step 1, start with the American Occupational Therapy Association's Find an OT tool, filtered by telehealth and adult ADHD. Also check the OT Toolbox directory and Sensational Brains listings. Step 2, identify 3 to 5 practitioners who look promising and send a brief email. And I mean brief, 3 sentences, describing your situation and asking if they work with international clients. Step 3, book one session with whoever responds and seems like the best fit. Don't over-optimize this. The goal is to try the format, not to find the perfect lifelong practitioner on the first attempt.
Step 4. Go into that session with a specific goal. Not help me with my life, but I need strategies for managing construction noise during work hours, or I need help designing a workspace that reduces visual overwhelm.
Specificity is everything. The OT can only work with what you give them, and a focused goal makes the session immediately productive. You can always broaden the scope later.
I think there's an open question here that's worth sitting with, which is where this is all heading. We've got AI-driven therapeutic tools emerging, chatbots that do cognitive behavioral therapy, AI coaches that can analyze your environment through video. The obvious next step is some kind of hybrid model where AI handles the initial environmental audit and a human OT provides the higher-level strategy.
That's already starting to happen in some research settings. You can imagine an AI that watches a video tour of your workspace and flags potential sensory issues, glare patterns, noise sources, visual clutter density, and generates a preliminary report. Then the human OT reviews it, adds clinical judgment, and does the coaching session. It would dramatically lower the cost and increase the throughput.
Daniel's situation is almost a perfect test case for that. He needs environmental modification more than hands-on sensory integration. A lot of the assessment work is observational. If an AI could do the first pass, the human OT's time could be spent entirely on strategy and coaching.
That might solve the access problem at scale. If the bottleneck is a tiny pool of specialized OTs who accept international clients, anything that makes those OTs more efficient increases the number of people they can serve. The 3 OTs on that directory might be able to handle 30 clients each instead of 15.
We're not there yet, and Daniel needs help now. So the question isn't, is remote OT the future? It's, is remote OT good enough to make a meaningful difference in a life that's currently overwhelmed? And based on everything we've looked at, I think the answer is yes, with the right practitioner and clear goals.
The evidence supports non-inferior outcomes for functional task performance. The environmental observation advantages are real. The cost and time savings are substantial. And the alternative, continuing to struggle without support, has a cost too, even if it doesn't show up on a bill.
The one thing I'd add is that Daniel's instinct to seek occupational therapy rather than talk therapy is worth trusting. He said he's been thirsting for this his whole life, without having the vocabulary to name it. That's not a random preference. That's someone recognizing that their bottleneck is function, not insight.
That's exactly what OT is designed for. It's the profession that asks, what do you need to do, and what's in the way? For someone with ADHD navigating sensory overwhelm and executive dysfunction while parenting a toddler in a conflict zone, that question is a lot more urgent than, how does that make you feel?
The feelings are valid, but they're downstream of the environment. Fix the environment, and the feelings often follow.
That's the OT philosophy in a sentence.
To Daniel directly, remote OT is real, it's evidence supported, and it's probably your best option given the access constraints. The search will take some effort, but the effort is finite. We're talking about sending a few emails and booking one session. You don't need to solve the whole problem at once, you just need to try the format and see if it helps.
If any listeners have tried remote OT for ADHD, sensory issues, or anything else, we want to hear about it. This is an evolving space, and real-world experience is the best data we've got. Email the show at show@myweirdprompts.com.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
The Soviet Union's first mass-produced civilian radio receiver, the Rodina 47, was introduced in 1947 and remained in continuous production until 1957. Despite being marketed for home use, it was deliberately designed without a shortwave band, an intentional omission by Soviet authorities to prevent citizens from tuning into foreign broadcasts, effectively making it a radio that could only hear what the state wanted it to hear.
A radio designed to have limited hearing. That's uncomfortably on the nose for today's topic.
That's one I'm going to be thinking about.
This has been My Weird Prompts. If you got something out of this episode, tell someone who might need to hear it, and leave us a review wherever you listen. We're back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth's slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.